Chip Walton joins me this week to talk about smoked beers, cider, and more. This is Beersmith Podcast number 249.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 249. It's late December 2021. Chip Walton joins me this week to talk about smoked beers, cider, and more. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. For more information, again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, the web-based version of Beersmith is available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the web lets you edit, create and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, tablet, or mobile device. The new web-based version gives you access to tens of thousands of recipes, online recipe editing, advanced water tools, and much more. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at beersmithrecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out beersmithrecipes.com now to give Beersmith Web a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Chip Walton. Chip was a videographer and producer of Brewing TV and has been producing a trademark show about great food and fermentation called Chop and Brew at chopandbrew.com for many years now. Chip's now back at Northern Brewer for his second tour of duty as video project producer. Chip, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. It's really good to be here. It's good to be wrapping up the year with you, Brad. I'm super excited to be the last guest of 2021.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. I see you got your Christmas tree in the background there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks good.
I try to keep it up. We've made it to mid-February once. I think that was our record.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So. Well, I can't believe this, but I've never had you on the show before, even though I've met you and talked to you a number of times.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's great to have you here. And, of course, you kind of gained to fame back in 2010 when you started editing Brewing TV originally, and then eventually went on the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it started kind of behind the scenes. This is Northern Brewer. I call it Northern Brewer 1.0, NB 1.0. I got hired out of a news career and started Brewing TV with Jake Keeler and Michael Dawson, who had already been well entrenched at Northern Brewer. And yeah, at first it was supposed to be very behind the scenes. I was just videographer, editor. I would make, you might hear me audibly in a blooper from me directing them or trying to produce a segment.
I'm thinking of the first episode that was basically, you started with a collection of bloopers, if I remember.
Yep, with a really bad decision to put in a real staticky sound effect with every cut instead of just no. Just let it be a cut. People get what's happening here. So
yeah,
lesson learned on episode one. And then, yeah, it got to the point where we were putting them out so frequently and regularly, but then our real jobs at Northern Brewer, or our primary jobs, I should say, Brewing TV was a real job, but our primary jobs started stacking up, and we're not going to have an episode. People expect these every other week. So I brewed a beer in my kitchen of our old rental house in Minneapolis. And that became kind of my first time. It's kind of when I think back on it, it's really the origin story of Chop and Brew. It's where I realized, and tons of YouTubers do this. They shoot themselves. They talk over what you're seeing. There's not a whole lot of editing, more polished editing. It's really just talk and point, walk and talk. So that was the first episode I did where I was the sole character and people were just who is this, the guy that's been shooting this the whole time? Why is he so hectic and frantic when he's brewing it?
Just your natural self, right? So, you were saying, so you launched this thing, I think back in May of 2010. Is that right?
Yep. May 7th, 2010.
And were you actually working in news before that? Were you working in video before that?
No, I had worked on more like the writing side. I was a field, a line producer for most of the 10 years I was in news, which means you're the person gathering script, editing it, putting it in a rundown, saying like, take camera one on anchor X, read these lines, roll video here. So I was more, and it's come in handy still, and it really came in handy in Brew and DV, because I came in and basically took like fun homebrew ideas and helped like put them on paper in the way that you would expect to see them in video. So I had not done a whole lot of shooting since and editing since college, but you know, I rode shotgun on many an edit session over somebody's shoulder, and I clearly saw some of the first tricks that you would do for cleaning up stuff and, excuse me, building sequences of, you know, long, medium, close up, and some of that classic stuff that to a fault probably still sticks in my blood. When I watch a lot of new brew tubers, I'm just like, man, their graphics and their lack of like concern for continuity is just like, I wish I had that in me. I still have a very like PBS documentary kind of news storytelling regimen about my storytelling that sometimes.
But, so essentially you were kind of a script writer then for the guys that read the news, right?
For sure. Yeah. 100%. Which came in handy, because then when we started treating brewing TV less like let's just brew and see what happens, but we were scripting, okay, for the first third of this episode, we're going to talk about a new style. The middle, we want to go find somebody who's brewing it. And then for the end, we kind of want to like bring it all back together. And, you know, it could be a debate style. It could be a mock, almost like a mock satire of what the style has become, you know. And that way it was easier to see it laid out, especially when like Jake and Mike got to the point where they were like, we have 2 hours to do this in the middle of our busy week. So we couldn't, at first it was a lot more just goofing around. And then, you know, basically the first holiday season, the 2010 version of what we're going through now, was when it was clear that this needs to be a little bit less of their time or more efficient use of their time.
I get it.
When I had access to them.
Yeah. Well, I've had both Jake and Michael on the show at various times. What was it like working with Jake Keeler and Michael Dawson?
It was mind blowing, because you got to remember, like, I started homebrewing in 2007 in Austin, Texas, in news. And then we moved up here in late 2008, still in news. Mm-hmm. So I was a homebrewer and fairly new. And just working in Northern Brewer, period, it was just like being thrust into this thing that you'd recently become pretty obsessed with, but didn't know anything about when it came down to it. So every day, especially working with Dawson, it was like working with like Charlie Papazian and getting to ask him every question in real time versus, oh, if I ever get a chance to see Charlie at one homebrew con 3 years from now, I might ask him this. So like we called him like Obi Dawson, or I can't remember what he's called, something like Obi-Wan, because it was just mind blowing, you know. And at that time he was the recipe creator.
Right.
He was kind of like the main marketing copywriter. So he was doing everything that supported homebrewing. And just watching his brain work when we were brewing or fixing problems during brew day. And then working with Jake, man, Jake is just like a workhorse and an organizer. And I mean, you've met them. They're both very charismatic, but like Dawson's very dry and kind of illiterati a little bit. And Jake Jake kind of gets in there and like meets somebody and can pull a story out of them and kind of get some good questions going. So like it was a perfect trifecta of kind of like, I mean, we even did a lost episode of Brewing TV where we showed this footage that we shot that was never seen because it was so bad. But it was when the concept was, it was being forced that like Jake was kind of a jerk and Dawson was kind of a nerd. And it's like, well, that's kind of what's happening anyway. We shouldn't force it to a point of caricature. But yeah, if you ever want to see how bad Brewing TV could have been, it came out on Chop and Brew. Like Northern Brewer let me put it out because it turned out I had the episode like on an old hard drive. Go look up like lost episode of Brewing TV. It's a hot mess. It's so bad.
Well, it was also an interesting time in homebrewing because homebrewing was growing double digits, I think right up until about 2013, and then it kind of leveled out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't claim to, like, people will tell us we helped make that happen. And we still, I got a video from a guy just this week on Facebook, like, giving us credit for him starting a brewery just this year. And I'm like, man, that's 12 years ago.
Yeah, but it's
wild. Being a part of it during that upward trajectory, man, it was cool. It was like watching, I don't know, it was just like watching homebrew blow up, but also then being a part of it blowing up. And it was like documenting a hobby that was like hipper than just a hobby for that time. So it was the most perfect 3 years to kind of do that for a company versus like what I do now, which is just like bootstrap funding and finding time. But yeah, we worked at Northern Brew. It was like every other Friday, there has to be an episode. And then the weeks in between those is when we would do like the true instructional DVDs that came with starter kits or the Northern Brewer Y Yeast limited edition. You know, every other week was like Northern Brewer marketing. And then every other week was Brewing TV, which was also Northern Brewer marketing, but came like in the form of like storytelling a little bit more.
But videos take a tremendous amount of time. We were talking about this before. I did a series with Palmer, of full-length videos, and you know, gosh, it took me months to edit, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours of video, basically.
Yeah, it's unreal. I don't know if people, I'm not even saying it for myself, but I don't know if like viewers appreciate what a lot of these people, like Homebrew for Life and Apartment Brewer, and I can't remember the Homebrew Challenge and Short Circuit, like the time that goes into it is pretty, it's insane. It's a little bit insane for being something that like, you're probably not, maybe you're making a little scratch off of, but it's most likely you're not getting bankrolled by Northern Brewer, which was like the sweetest part. And then part of that was we also got to travel. Like we'd go to every NHC. So we would find like two or three episodes we could do while in whatever town NHC was in. And then that opened the door for us to like go to like Stone, Dogfish Head, you know, these like bucket list breweries on my list, because once we had, you know, 50 episodes under our belt or whatever, 15 people, like we could send them kind of an example and they're like, oh, these guys aren't going to show up and need us to explain how to brew beer for the 100th time on video. They know what's going on. We're going to get in here and we're really going to talk about some ingredients, some techniques. So that was kind of the best part, was coming with both the support of Northern Brewer, the funding of Northern Brewer, and then, just kind of some a little street cred, which was nice for three random homebrewers with camera. But it clicked so well that I think a lot of people were like, I want to be part of this. This seems fun. And it was before everybody was doing it. Now, like you could basically do, you know, a press junket of video podcasts, whereas there it was like, it was pretty unique for somebody to be calling you up saying, we're going to be in Madison. We saw you won a medal. At NHC, you want to brew that beer with and for us and just talk us through it?
Yeah. Well, after the original cast broke up, you launched your own show called Chop and Brew in, I think, 2013. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Chop and Brew is, I mean, it's very much like Brewing TV, except I've never been able to find other hosts. I've always self-hosted it, which I, even though I've been doing it for going on 10 years, pretty soon, I keep telling people like, I'm still looking for my host. So yeah, I just kind of kept that torch going, carrying it. And the beauty was like, once I kind of called it Chop and Brew, it could be as much about food as beer, whereas Brewing TV only went there maybe once or twice. It really just wasn't, we were trying to stay more focused. So yeah, I've just been doing it from home. I used to be a lot more frequent with it. But there's kind of no holds barred either. It's a good thing. Like, so I've tried a lot of different things and formats. But just like with Brewing TV, because people wanted to be a part of it, it's taken me to Norway. It's taken me to Ireland. Pittsburgh. I mean, it's weird to put Pittsburgh after Norway and Ireland, but you know,
similar climates, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's also allowed me some really great opportunities that sometimes I don't think I sit back and kind of, and itemize those enough. Cause there are times where I get very frustrated and think I want to shut it down. And then I get a video like this guy this week that gives me and some other people like credit for getting him to become a craft brewer from a homebrewer 12 years ago, all the way to like, yeah, I would never have gone to Norway if I hadn't made friends with this guy who was a fan. And 2 years later, we're like at his cellar brewing traditional Norwegian beers. And so it's difficult because it's not, well, I'll say it was difficult because it wasn't part of my day job. Now it is my day job again in a different way, which we can talk about in a second. But the hardest part's always been, you know, it's not part of, no one's telling me like every other week there really needs to be one out. It's really like I do it when I can do it. And since having a kid about a year ago, there's even less time for it. But I've managed to keep a pretty decent clip this year, partly by simplifying things. Like you said, the editing is the tough part. So if you start shooting in a way where the editing is really just piecing clips together versus, you know, what I'm really big on is like, let me have someone narrate and then we're going to shoot cover video to cover it. Maybe we'll have some nice nat pops to like smooth.
Put some music on it.
Yeah, exactly. That's my jam. But like, it's not sustainable if you have another job and a kid. Yeah. And a wife and a dog, all this stuff. So, Chop and Brew is kind of whatever it can be at the time. And I'm sitting on at least 20 episodes going back as far as like, I mean, when we went to Ireland, I think in 2016, there's still two videos from that trip. There's this probably 5 video series from Norway that is just like kind of the biggest self stressor in my head that I put on myself. Like, that's embarrassing that I haven't gotten it edited in 2 years and I'm going to try to make that a big focus of January. We've even like lost a person who had been looking forward to that. You know, someone we talked to when we were there has passed since then. And that's been kind of like an emotional letdown to myself. You know, you think these videos are all fun and games and then you kind of cross this divide, right? Between like creator and like human and friend and person that went to these places. And now somebody who greatly looked forward to seeing that project come to fruition isn't even around. So that's kind of the downside of it. And you'll know this, like it's easier to shoot than it is to edit. It's all fun and games to like put up a GoPro and shoot a brew day. It's a lot different to find 3 hours to edit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've been doing this, I think some 160 some odd episodes, over 9 years. What are some of the lessons you've taken away from 9 years of Chop and Brew?
Man, on, what do you think, on like the brew side or the production side?
I think more on the brewing side. I you know, you and I do video production, but I'm not sure the general audience sets our focus really.
Brewing, I don't know. I think, it was clear that kind of like we've talked about it, got really big from in the early 2010s. I feel like homebrewing's in a position where it's trying to hold on to as many people as it can to stay interested. But just like any hobby that then / turns into an industry, you know, you need to make new brewers. And the trouble's kind of been like, as craft beer has boomed so intensely in that exact same footprint of time, I think it's become difficult to keep people interested in homebrewing or convince them that they should spend time doing this thing.
Yeah, I think I just want to say for those of you who don't know, I mean, homebrewing has been flat or even declining a little bit since probably 2013, right?
Yeah, and it's weird because it seemed to blow up first and then craft beer came behind it. I think because all these homebrewers went pro and then as craft beer kind of leveled homebrewing. So it's weird. It's kind of like, will homebrewing lead the way again? I don't think so. I think there's, at a certain point, there's like an event horizon of people you're going to bring into this hobby. So I think what a lot of like newer brewtubers are doing is just making it seem fun as hell, which it is, and it can be. They're putting that like really like fun spin on it. What else have I learned? I just feel like people change the way they brew with their life. You know, obviously, like most people get a system set up and kind of like ride with that. But then other people, like myself, like started brewing smaller batches or brewing less. I went back to brewing extract for a minute and tried to like bring some things I'd learned over the years back to extract. Be like, can I make a better extract beer? And you can, you know, people always argue you're never going to make the exact beer you would with all grain, but I definitely made better extract last year when I was experimenting with doing it than I did 10 years earlier. I just think there's no hold bar is the main thing about brewing. Mm-hmm. There's just every pastry stout, every ingredient, every fruit in a kettle sour, every six ingredient combo. I'm sure, you know, one answer to this question is just like access to ingredients is even more immediate, you know, for mm-hmm. homebrewers than it might have been. So now those are kind of, I guess, some things that come to mind. But I also feel like people have tried to make it as easy as possible in order to justify staying involved. And that's where you get all the like all-in-one kind of brew systems, whether that's, you know, your grandfather or something even way more robotic and robust. It is kind of mind-blowing to see some of the systems. I do feel like there were not those kind of systems were cobbled together by like engineer folk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Back in the day, where now you can just like, man, I went to NanoCon maybe two falls ago. That was, can't remember.
Well, one of the topics you want to talk about today was actually the whole topic of scaling down your homebrew batches, and then of course I assume along with that we want to probably talk about a lot of the all-in-one equipment that's available now.
Yeah, I mean, I scaled down mainly because I wanted to keep brewing, but I just found myself constantly kind of getting what I call brewer's anxiety every time I thought about leading into a brew day. Was I going to use my 10-gallon kettle and the false bottom to match? Was I going to use the 10-gallon kettle with the pulley and the brew in the bag? So I really got back to just doing either small brew in a bag. So what I've done now is I've taken a 5-gallon igloo cooler and outfitted it, you know, with a bazooka and a ball valve. And that's been my jam for about the last 6 months, because I can brew, you know, I can end up with 3.5 gallons maybe. And also part of that is my brew days are way longer now that we've had a son. I don't spend like 5 or 6 hours at one time brewing. The most typical way it goes down is I'll mash in before everybody wakes up, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever, do some breakfast, run off work, do something else, and then that work might sit until like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So it literally has taken all day to brew, but it's not like that's a whole day spent away from all the other activities of the house. But another reason for scaling down is it kind of goes back to like, I would give up the hobby, I think, if it weren't for Chop and Brew. It's kind of like I keep homebrewing so there's content for Chop and Brew, but I keep doing Chop and Brew because I'm brewing. So I got to the point where like between buying beer and other friends having it, I didn't necessarily need beer, but I can't stop wanting to brew, especially stuff I can't get, whether it's these like emulating Norwegian farmhouse beers, or I really got into smoked graft this year, which is like a smoked beer wort meat cider. Mm-hmm. Most of what I brew still is very much kind of to the idea of how homebrewers started, say back in the 70s. It really was like, you hear the story all the time, I brewed because I couldn't find X. I was in the military, I was stationed in Germany, I came home, all there was Bud Light. Probably not even Bud Light, Budweiser. So I started brewing, you know, Dortmunders and stuff. So I think there's a modern equivalent of that still, where no matter how wacky the beer scene gets, you might want to be wackier, or you might actually just want a damn English pub ale in a town where nobody's making it. So I still make that kind of stuff for myself for the most part.
Yeah, I think I've talked about this on the show quite a bit too. I think a lot of us are coming around, you know, to the fact that COVID's kind of impacted the way we do things, and you know, we don't have the same social engagements. For me, I have a hard time getting rid of 10 gallons of beer very quickly, yeah. And now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
So if I brew, you know, a couple times a month, I just can't drink all that beer, you know, that quickly.
Yeah, it gets, I mean, we're not like giving away any secrets here. Like, it gets unhealthy to have that much beer around and no one to share it with, honestly. So yeah. that was also part of it. But, you know, shameless, not self-promotion for you, man. The Beersmith is like made scaling so awesome and easy. Like, I do a 5-gallon, if I'm taking a recipe from someone else or borrowing it from a book, I'll do like a 5-gallon version. Then I'll just do make copy. Then I'll scale that down to 3, and then I'll throw a little 3G in the title. And
there you go.
And I hit those numbers so well. So yeah, I want to say I appreciate you doing that for us. Cause like, I'm still, even this 13 years in the homebrewing hobby, like, I'm still horrible at numbers. I'm still horrible at visualizing adjustments. Like, that's why it was so fun to work with Dawson. I'd be like, I want to brew X. And he would just spit me out like a Beersmith PDF and be like, here it is, go do it. I was like, yeah. It's like having your own kind of like recipe generator working with somebody like that.
Well, thanks, Chip. But yeah. And then I think the other trend here that we're seeing with these all-in-one systems and so on is just, you know, a simplified, shorter, more compact brew day, because, you know, brewing has to compete with all the other things going on in life.
Yeah, one of my goals for this winter is, so I have a Grainfather G30, got it a couple years ago, used it a few times, really liked it, but still just kind of kept leaning back to that, like, brew in a bag for some reason. But what I really want to do is get it figured out to how to use that in my basement. That's where I've only used it in the garage. And they just put out, it's so funny how like a little new gadget can kind of reignite your interest in a piece of equipment. But Grainfather, just this week, at least at Northern Brewer, we got them this week. They made, the plates at the top and bottom, mm-hmm. that used to have the rubber gasket or plastic gasket, no rubber,
yeah.
that were super difficult to work with. They finally made rolled edge plates for the top and bottom. And I bought a set today, and it's got me excited to, like, it's not like that's why I stopped using the Grainfather, but if there could be just one less thing that I'm like going to have to do a weird workaround for. So I'm excited. I think I'm going to brew a crimson ale for the upcoming Alabama appearances in the playoffs and championships. Thankfully, this comes out before either of those games in case I have to eat my hat. But I'm planning on brewing a crimson ale to turn pretty quickly for that series of games this weekend. I'm looking forward to like just dropping those rolled edge plates in and like, that was so easy.
Yeah, I flew out to Denver recently for the Brew Your Own boot camp out there, and I think we had 170 some odd people there. But even just meeting with other brewers and talking with them again really helped me re-energize a little bit, because you know, you get locked down, or you don't see people. There's not a lot of brew club meetings and so on anymore. So you get a little isolated, I think. But
that's a good point. And I think NanoCon, even though I have no interest in like starting a small brewery, when I went to NanoCon, I was really inspired by the people I pulled aside and was just like, tell me your story. And it was so varied, like why people were there, you know, whether it was a husband and wife trying to start a small place in Waco, or say like two buddies with a three location pizza chain who just wanted to make beer only for their business. I was like, man, this is so cool. But then like the international people that were there and hearing their version, like this one dude from Sweden who gets to brew on a Grainfather and sell out of his basement. He's got a basement pub. It is beautiful. Like, you, if you walked in there, you would not have any idea you were in the lower level of someone's actual home. And that kind of stuff just makes you say like, all right, we've got a long way to go. Like the rest of the world, we often think like is envious of homebrewers here with the styles and the ingredients and the equipment. But when I look at a situation like that, I was like, man, I'd much rather the laws be more lenient in that direction where people could, you know, make like a legit living without, oh my gosh, all that steel and like real estate. And
yeah,
so I agree. Like, just that was probably the last time I was around a big group of people. And it was very inspiring too. I miss HomebrewCon, man. I was looking back at this footage from 2017, Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
17. It's almost like it gives you the heebie-jeebies, and that makes me it gives me the heebie-jeebies, but that makes me feel bad about getting the heebie-jeebies. I was like, there's nothing about a room full of 1,000 people that should make me feel like that, but in modern times. But not going down that rabbit hole, but the point is, like, it was hilarious to just, like, have my friend running around with the stick mic and just, like, riffing and improvising, you know. Yep. Club night. Club night just gives you a million opportunities to just, like, you're hanging out with a group of Chicago gangsters. Now you're hanging out with a bunch of farm animals. Now one club's dressed up like all the gnomes and the elves. And
it is great.
I look forward to that. Yeah. Those times again, for sure.
Well, another topic you mentioned was smoked malt. I understand you said you've been working a lot with smoked beers.
Yeah, I am. And I'm definitely no expert, for sure. But in the last year, I've gotten Alderwood smoked beer. So there's this like maltster called Sugar Creek Malting in Indiana, and they make extremely unique and small batches of smoked malt. So one that they make is an Alderwood smoked malt, and Alderwood is very specific, I would say, to Norway. So as I was kind of trying to replicate some of these beers that I learned about in Norway, Alderwood, and the way that this guy Caleb, you know, the way he smokes these, it's like smoke is part of the entire process, not just some smoke malts where it's kind of towards the end or in kilning. Like, this is basically wet malt over smoke its entire life. So it's a supremely pungent smoke. I brewed with it. So the way that this started is a couple of fans sent me a 100% Alderwood smoked beer. And it was like, even my smoked beer fans and friends here in town were just like, I just can't take it. It's so much. And it was like dark red because it gets that cooked in the process.
Well, that's a challenge. How do you get the right balance of smoke, really? Or many of these other things, you know, how do you get the right flavor balance?
And I tried it at like 15% and it was clearly less, but there's some of the same people were like, man, there is something so dense about this. So I think like knowing the smoke malt, which in that case I really didn't, cause my only reference point was 100%. I would say, you know, smoke malt, I don't know. It's cool. Cause I'm in this group called This Week in Rausch Beer that people should join on Facebook if you're a fan of anything smoke beer. And it's really mind blowing to kind of go back to like what's changed in 10 years, like the beers that people are making of smoke, like everything is innocent as like a smoke pill, smoked Helles, like smoked Doppelbock. So I don't know what the key is to balance. You'd want to think it's like malt foundation, maybe a little sweetness. It doesn't seem like bitterness is probably ever the answer to bittering most or to balancing most smoke. I just think it's finding a smoke flavor maybe you like. So the most recent thing I did was Applewood smoked malt from the same place, Sugar Creek. Mm-hmm. And that tastes like bacon and honey grams. Way more innocent, too. Like, so I basically made a 100% Applewood smoked wort with that malt. And then I blended that. So 3 gallons of that. And then I blended it with 2 gallons of cider for this thing called, that I'm calling a Rauschgraf. So I don't know what this malt tastes like fermented on its own, but I know through having it before it was blended that it probably would have been spot on for like entry level smoke for people, even in the cider now that it's, or the graph now that it's kegged, because of how dry cider ferments.
Yeah,
probably still could have used a little back sweetening in order to support the smoke, a little what you would consider the back sweetening of an apple cider.
Right, because cider is very, very dry if you just ferment it out, right?
Yeah, and I even tried 2 things. So I did an episode earlier at the beginning of this year about a Rauschgraf that in the course of it, I was like, I learned 2 lessons doing this. One is you got to mash higher than you think because a low mash wort wants to ferment down. But then a cider always wants to ferment way down. So you put 2 things that want to be dry together, and it was very dry. I liked it personally. I did back sweeten a little bit of that just to prove a point. But then, so this one, I mashed it like 158. I tried to kind of play the numbers game without, again, being very good at numbers. I was like, all right, if my mash is this high and I'm throwing it in here with cider and fermented that with like Imperial Independence, which is kind of an Imperial or an England IPA yeast. So I tried several things to not get it to go bone dry. And it still got down to like 10.09, but it didn't go to, you know, 10.01 mm-hmm. or zero.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that. We just put that on to carbonate Monday, so I won't have my first taste of it. The whole goal was to have it ready for Christmas, so I'll follow up and let you know how that turns out.
So, I mean, what have you been using to make your cider, for example? And a lot of people don't know you. I mean, you can make great cider just with most of the equipment you have on hand, right?
Yeah, for sure. And this is like really on my mind because we're in the middle of scripting a class for Northern Brewer about hard cider. So, yeah, I usually only do it once a year, and then I do it because of apple harvest. So, you know, October, November, the homebrew club I'm in, or one of them, Minnesota Homebrewers Association, we do a bulk buy. It shows up in this giant plastic cube, and you bring your 5-gallon bucket. A bucket, tandem tablets to kill any wild yeast that might be in it, pectic enzyme to decrease haze. Mm-hmm. It's almost like making a wine, where it's like it's really not a lot about the front end. It's more about yeast nutrients and other like energizers and nutrients throughout that week of fermentation. And then it can just take a really long time to clear. Like, it's one of those beverages that I think most people would suggest you put in secondary. I think there's certain blends and certain yeasts that work well for letting it kind of hang out on the lees of primary. But it's definitely, whereas my beers, I've stopped secondaries like years ago. Cider is one of those things that you kind of tuck it away. I mean, you could drink it fresh and young, but it can be a little sulfury. It can be a little just sharp. Tart mellows out even if you don't plan on back sweetening. So yeah, I would say if you're brewing beer already and you have a starter kit, you've already got everything you need but the juice. But you can also, I've never had Trader Joe's apple cider, I guess apple juice, apples, I don't know what they call it, but they're store-bought. You can get the exact same process. I just feel like there's a richness and a depth when you go out and get like orchard press, non-pasteurized. It can even be pasteurized, but definitely not no preservatives. It's something you can do year round, but I kind of like owning the process in the fall because it just seems like you're kind of doing it in tandem with harvest, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly make cider from a store bought juice just by like you said, you got to pick the no preservatives. Basically, it can be pasteurized, but not preserved. Exactly. Which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like. My wife and I specifically like really dry, like brute cider. So I just let it go and it's tart and champagne-y. The one time I did back sweeten, I was impressed and happy with it, but I've still just never done it again. You know,
do you happen to be using real cider apples or are you just using regular apple juice?
The time that I back sweetened, yeah, I just used, I think it was half a can of apple juice concentrate after it thawed. And a lot of people will boohoo that and say you got to make a mixture out of other sugar sources. It's just like anything in homebrewing, man. There's people will fight to the death for the way that they do it. But a little back sweetening, just like with mead, it's surprising what it'll bring out or even like bring back to it because you fermented so much out. But in the end, I'm like, it goes back to, I can go buy, especially here in Minneapolis, there's a couple of cideries. I can find their semi-sweet or semi-dry. So what I want to do when I do it at home is I just want the bone dry, the tart, champagne-y cider.
And you mentioned making meads. I guess we got time for maybe one more topic. Can you talk to us about some of the mead work you've done?
I honestly haven't done much. It's a random
sizer, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of mead people. And if people really want to know about mead, we did a whole series called Better Judge a Mead that Josh Holbrook did for me or with me this year. And that is some in-depth mead making. I don't make it as much because I know so many amazing mead makers that are very generous with their stash. So the One Honey Project that you just mentioned, I've done this year, that I did take some of that orchard cider this year I got enough to set some aside, and then I blended that with 3 pounds of honey, and it fermented amazingly well. I just did that almost as a, hey, I keep hearing about this, let's try it. It went from like 1080 to 1012. It's already started clearing on its own in primary. So it's a wonderful flavor combination too, where you get a little bit of this body and this like honey sweetness, but then the apple is there doing this kind of tart thing. So I assume this is something I probably will back sweeten just a little, because I feel like with the sizer, you really want that apple back in there. And right now it definitely tastes more kind of like session plus mead with some interesting flavors in it. But
that's I make a lot of meads, but I make them with a lot of very tart or acidic or tannic fruits. And then, of course, I actually end up leaving residual sweetness, which you start with an insanely high gravity to do that.
Okay.
And you know, basically you run past the top of the alcohol tolerance for the yeast.
Okay.
And that's another way to get sweetness without back sweetening, but butter requires a really high starting gravity to do that. But yeah. I mean, like you said, you can accomplish exactly the same thing with back sweetening. Cuz a little bit of that sweetness to balance the tartness from the apples or whatever other fruit you're using makes a huge difference really in the finished mead.
Yeah. Well, if that was the last question, I wanted to like turn the tables though on you, since it's the end of the year. I wanted to ask if there was some lessons from 2021 that kind of sit on your mind, or more importantly, like what's happening next year. What do you see in your crystal ball for 2022?
Boy, I don't know. I just, you know, like I said, I finally got back from the BYO event. I got motivated to brew again. So I'm getting ready to make a porter here during the break. And the other thing I did just very recently is bought some cranberries juice, actually, because I'm going to make a cranberry mead. And I'd made one a few years ago, but it wasn't quite right in terms of the overall balance and flavor and everything. So I've done a little more research on it, and I'm going to take another shot at it here shortly. And you know, making mead's nice because it's very quick. It doesn't really take any time. You basically mix it up together, much like you were describing with the cider. So, I mean, that's in my immediate plans. You know, I continue to, obviously, Beersmith, I continue to work on, I'm working on an inventory system. Many people know the web-based version's out now, so I'm working on a web-based inventory system at the moment. And then probably working on the next version of Beersmith, which will be you know, kind of the desktop main version. I'm getting ready to start almost a complete rewrite with a whole new tech base and everything early in the next year. So I think I'll keep myself busy. But thanks for asking, Chip. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Code and brew. Code and brew.
Well, yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, it's kind of hard sometimes when you take your hobby and turn it into a business, and you probably know this as well. But at the same time, I do still enjoy it even after all these years. I've been brewing since 1987, so a long time now. So I still enjoy it, and I still find new things to do, you know?
Yeah. Good for you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get your closing thoughts on over a decade now as a homebrew celebrity, Chip.
Oh, man, my closing thoughts. I don't know. I would just say, like, first and foremost, like, I would just appreciate, you know, it's the end of the year we're coming up on, and kind of looking back and looking ahead and all those moments. And, like, it's really cool to have been a part of something like Brewing TV that really seemed to kind of like set the pace, not only for the hobby or help set the pace for a hobby, but really kind of like, I feel like the quality of homebrew videos really like skyrocketed. And I don't know if people just needed to see people being like just goofy enough or just sassy enough or whatever. I just feel like we have so many great resources now that are entertaining as well as educational. That's cool. And then I just appreciate being able to keep doing, you know, Top and Brew is more or less like a documentary of what I find interesting. But then every now and then we get these golden opportunities to like travel afar or kind of really bring something new out, or even celebrate something like Tasty, you know, Tasty passed and they made Janet's Brown Ale. the big brew recipe, and that like brought me and some friends together in a way that we hadn't, you know, through Zoom. But we did like a giant 12-pack swap and did this epic like variant tasting. So yeah, there's always an excuse. There's always an excuse to keep brewing, and hopefully soon it becomes, you know, wrapped back around a good excuse to hang out, to share, to socialize, other than like leaving a 6-pack in someone's back stoop.
Yeah, and we're both very fortunate we're able to make a living doing this, right, Chip?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, being back at Northern Brewers, just like, even if I'm not scratching that chop and brew itch, I'm definitely going to be, you know, like, I just got to put out this great Night Before Christmas for Beer Nerds video that I've been writing this poem for like 3 years and just never got the gumption to turn it around on Chop and Brew. Here I throw it out at a table, an idea session at Northern Brewer, and now it exists. So it is. It's awesome to be back in a space where, you know, some of the stuff I do for Northern is not stuff I would even do for Chop and Brew, and vice versa. So I also get inspired a lot at work for stuff I can do at home.
Yeah. Well, Chip, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been great having you, and hopefully I can have you back in a couple months.
Yeah, man. I'll follow up on what went down with the Crimson Ale. Roll Tide, hopefully.
Hopefully,
yeah. I really appreciate it, dude. This was super fun. I appreciate your work too, man. Thanks for helping us guys that are bad at numbers make better beer.
Well, thank you, Chip. My guest today was Chip Walton, the host of Chop and Brew, and you can find him online at chopandbrew.com or, again, at Northern Brewer. Thanks again, Chip.
Yeah, man. Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year. A big thank you to Chip Walton for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit blickmanengineering.com for more information. Again, that's blickmanengineering.com. And finally, I'm happy to say that the web-based version of Beersmith is available now at beersmithrecipes.com. Beersmith for the Web lets you build, edit, and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, tablet, or mobile device. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days for free by setting up an account at beersmithrecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out beersmithrecipes.com today to give it a try. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.